Welcome to Conscious Life Spaces Conversations Podcast. My name is Amy Adams, and I'm your guide on this journey today. Today, I spoke with Ashley Morley of Ashley Morley Movement. Ashley is originally from California and is now living and teaching in England. We spoke about yoga, its challenges as benefits, building community, leaving a legacy, and much more.
If I were to look at what my legacy is, it's helping people realize their greatness and realize their physical abilities as well as mental abilities. And because by taking care of themselves, they're going to show up greater in the world, and it's going to cause that ripple effect of just making the world a better place because they're a happier person.
Before we begin the interview with Ashley, I just wanted to take a moment to remind you that there is a resource library available to you. There are downloadable meditations. There are some workbooks on gardening. There are a lot of different tools to help navigate this beautiful and complex world. You can access the resource library when you subscribe to the newsletter. Go to this website. It is getit.conscious-life.guru. I will put the link here and also in the show notes. I asked Ashley to tell us how she got into yoga and what her journey has been towards really evolving into this career and helping other people.
Thank you, Amy. That's wonderful. So I have over 20 years of experience. I started getting into fitness and movement, and specifically yoga, about 20 years ago when I was trying to deal with depression and anxiety. I initially had tried medications, and I really didn't like how they made me feel. I'm in no way anti-medications. I just want to clear that up right now, but it just wasn't for me. And so I was listening to good old NPR, and there was an article on there about how yoga and diet could change the way you felt. It could adjust the chemicals in your body. And I thought, well, I will give that a try. And I was in Tahoe at the time, and we had an amazing community college. And so I signed up for like 3 yoga classes. And because they were with the community college, they had a curriculum aspect to it. So not only were we learning asana, we were also learning the history, learning anatomy. It was kind of like this little mini teacher training before teacher trainings really existed. This was back in 1999. And it really did. It started to make a huge change in my life. And so through that movement, and then also I started eating cleaner than I ever had before, kind of paleo before paleo was a buzzword. So I just started eating whole foods. I stopped eating dairy. I stopped buying things that had more than 5 ingredients in them, and just started making small changes like that. And it really helped me become a happier person without medication. And it just was something that was always with me. And I found that I felt so good being physically challenged. So that led to me doing boot camps, which led to me becoming a wildland firefighter, which was probably one of the most physically exhausting and rewarding things besides giving birth for me. And so I mean I went on to have like a grown-up career in marketing and public relations, and it was around 30 years old that I was just feeling like, this isn't for me. It's kind of soul-sucking. I'm not happy. I was feeling depressed again, and I remember calling my mother up crying, just saying, I just want to be a yoga instructor because people would at least be happy when they saw me, and I can make a difference in people's lives. And so that very next day, I went and got a desk job at a yoga studio that was just around the corner from my house, because they offered the front desk gals free teacher training. Mm-hmm. And so I started moonlighting as a receptionist at a yoga studio and went through the training, and they asked me to come and teach. And that was in 2010. And from that point on, I quickly rose to one of the top instructors in that studio, continued training, and it's just been a phenomenal career. It's been amazing watching the community grow and watching people change their lives and their dialogues with themselves about movement and where they prioritize that in their life.
When you decided to make this change, and so I'm going to back up a little bit. So you went to school in your community college, you took the classes, but then after that, did you just practice yoga like on your own? Is that kind of what you did here and there? Or did you have a break from that? Or did you just decide to work out? Like, what was the thing there?
So yoga, I continued to practice it off and on throughout my entire 20s. So I started taking yoga when I was about 19. And I really used yoga as kind of a way to help rehab me from all my other physical activities that I did. I also, during that time, discovered a practice called Tibetan heart yoga, which was kind of a combination of Kundalini Kriyas and vinyasa flow, all centered around the heart chakra.
I have been playing around with yoga off and on for years, but I know a lot of terms because I read a lot of stuff, but I still don't know a lot of stuff. And in there, like, I've heard of like Kriya yoga, and I've heard of I know like Kundalini is like the base of your spine, the snake rising up, kind of becoming awake in the world, right? But the Kundalini and the Kriya, mm-hmm. and all that, like, how can you just break it down a little bit for us and explain to people who wouldn't know
what
some of that is?
Okay. Yes. So Kundalini yoga is awakening the base chakra. Kundalinis believe that we have our life source and our power source that sits at the base of our spine. And they do movements called kriyas, which are very dynamic movements. So like maybe it's like pounding your chest or just kind of doing these dynamic movements to help awaken your Kundalini, to help it serpent way up and come out the top of your head. Tibetan heart yoga is all about the fourth chakra. And they would use a combination of kriyas that are supposed to help open the heart chakra through vinyasa yoga and intention setting around the heart. And most of the time we were asked to dedicate our practice to people, to someone in need. And it was a really profound physical and emotional and spiritual experience for me. And it really kind of helped solidify my love for yoga. Even though the initial yoga I was taking was just good old fashioned Hatha yoga with this amazing English teacher, English woman, who was a yoga instructor named Amrito. It was really that Kundalini yoga that showed me, wow, this can be a huge physical practice as well as a spiritual practice.
Right.
And I absolutely loved that, combining the two, because what good are we as spiritual beings if we don't have a vessel to carry our souls around?
Right. Yeah. That's, you have to take care of the vessel. Exactly. That's, without that, then you don't, that's a whole kind of idea, I think, too, when people say sometimes, that take self-care is like selfish. And I'm like, no, it's not, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't even give to anyone else. And when you actually think about it, it's like, yeah, well, if I'm feeling fit and good, I'm going to have more energy, I'm going to have more vibrancy, and I'm going to be able to give. And if I'm just really tired and I'm feeling sickly, how can I do that? So I recently went on a little retreat, and actually I learned something, which we did this thing where we were going like this, like very fast. And I've never done a yoga movement like that ever in all the classes I've taken or followed online even. And so I thought that was really fascinating that you just talked about that, because I didn't really, I mean, honestly, it's kind of a blur in my mind exactly what we were doing at the time, but it felt really good, and there was a reason behind it. And I think it was a hard kind of thing to kind of let go of some things, but that's so fascinating to learn that, because I didn't even really know that.
So. Yeah, I think the Kriya movements are underutilized, and I like that they're creeping up more and more in mainstream yoga culture. Yeah, because they can be really effective, especially when you're doing them in a room full of people. And it's like, just, you think about it, it's like literally fanning the flames and the energy within the room.
Yeah, the energy really did feel, because you have also, I think, maybe like these movements, because they're fast, they're making a noise. So the noise, even if it's like a little noise, but if, you know, 10 or 20 people are making the noise together, it's going to be even louder. So that's really, yeah. You said that you started to eat cleaner. You said that you stopped eating things that had more than 5 ingredients. So it was like, if it has more than 5 ingredients, and that would be processed food pretty much. Is that the idea?
Yeah. So there was 2 things behind that. It was, if you couldn't pronounce an ingredient,
right,
then don't get it. And if it had more than 5 ingredients, then it's like, that's when all the additives and the preservatives came in. And you know, I shouldn't say you should, because not everybody can, but it was an effort to be preparing more of the food at home so that you knew what was going into your food. And also, you know, if you were to buy a jar of tomato sauce, just making sure that it wasn't full of sugar, that it wasn't full of color or anything like that, because all these things can, you know, tip your chemistry.
Right. What about the paleo diet? Because you mentioned that. And honestly, I have watched a lot of documentaries on like different diets and food. There was one recently on Netflix that had something about a child switched over to some kind of like whole food diet, right? So whole food is kind of easy. Paleo, I don't really know what that means. And I know so if you could just let us know what paleo is.
Yes. So paleo was kind of termed back in the early 2000s. It's the idea of eating more like our ancestors did. So that means no processed foods. It means no processed sugars. And we're talking before agricultural times, which, I mean, in reality, we're not eating like that, because I don't think that we were, you know, we had the type of cattle and chickens that we have today. People have the misconception that paleo is eating all the bacon and all the beef. I know lots of vegetarians and vegans that are paleo as well. It's embracing the idea that there are certain foods that we as humans cannot digest, and that our agricultural processes evolved quicker than our digestion tracts have. So it's the idea that there's grains that, unless prepared a certain way, that we cannot digest, that the majority of us cannot digest dairy. It's also the idea that, you know, fruit only came in season a couple times a year, so we weren't eating fruit all the time. It's this idea of eating closer to the land. I mean, some people take it as far as they hunt for their own food, they gather for their own food, and getting back to that kind of hunter-gatherer mentality, right. And just eating cleaner. Now, I don't think that it's a diet that's necessarily great for everybody. I think people need to kind of explore what works best for them personally, and really have a conversation with themselves about what they're putting in their bodies. How does that make them feel? For me, eating paleo feels good. I have energy. My skin is clear. It just, things work better.
Right. Well, that's interesting, because because there were a whole series of documentaries and they were talking about different diets. And of course, you know, some were arguing, you know, this way or that way. But the people that were doing them often found, like, there were people who found success with the different kinds of things that worked for them. But a lot of people weren't even being conscious at all about their diet. So to even think about what works for you is a good point and start. Okay, so I want to know too, when your mom, when you called her up crying, what did she say to you?
She was a superstar. She just said, Ashley, you need to do what makes you happy. And she always had this saying that when we were kids, if you give your gift from your heart, you will be a star. And so she said, if this is what you really feel, if this is what you're being pulled towards, then yes, go ahead and leave the comfort of your corporate job and explore this. We've got your back. Uh-huh. And so having that support, made it possible. made it possible for me to take that leap.
Yeah, I think that's important too, because I mean, a lot of people, not even from their parents, but just from TV and different things, this whole kind of idea of just following the mainstream, getting a good corporate job with benefits and, you know, following this kind of path. I mean, obviously some people really love it and it's great for them, but yeah, for the person who doesn't, it can be a kind of a death sentence almost to continue to go to a job that you're really unhappy in. I also started as a young person in a kind of, it was a summer job that turned into a bunch of years. And then one day I was like, what happened? So, and I met many people along the way who've had that. And then there are other people who love it. And it works for them. So
it was tough for me, I'll tell you, because I didn't necessarily get the pressure from my family, but I put these self-inflicted pressures on myself that I needed to be a high-powered corporate person. And it wasn't for me. You know, it was so soul-crushing for me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to work, but I couldn't show up and do it. It was too much for me.
Right.
And leaving the corporate world was the best decision, even though, like, I had so much guilt behind it.
Right. That's interesting about the guilt, because like having guilt, it's like if it was really your own goal initially and not really from outside sources to experience guilt over that, that's kind of interesting that you had that experience.
Yeah.
So did it take you a while after you left the corporate world to kind of feel okay about not being in it anymore, or did you feel like relieved? And I mean, did you feel afraid leaving it? I mean, just some, maybe you can help other people kind of understand, you know, I think we can all learn by everyone's experience, like what it was, because maybe somebody's thinking, I'd like to do that, but I'm terrified.
Well, yeah, it wasn't easy. I was 30 years old. I was single at the time. I was kind of seeing my now husband, but it was literally starting over again. So I left a comfortable paying job to essentially start over fresh. I had to take a job as a waitress. So I was working three jobs at one point. I was still working at the front desk of the yoga studio. I was at that point teaching all the outlier classes that weren't necessarily the most popular time slot. So I was teaching, they had three locations. I was teaching in their downtown LA location. I was teaching in the Venice Beach location and in the Silver Lake location. So I think I was probably paying to work with the amount of gas I was, but I was hungry for this. I loved it and I wanted to make it work. And I was also working as a waitress. And so it probably was about a year of me doing this, teaching 20 classes a week, waiting tables at night, and working at the front desk when they needed me. And it was exhausting. And I wanted to give up so many times. And I mean, I remember again calling my mother from the side of the road because I was about to run out of gas and I had no money in my account. And she transferred some money to my account so that I could get off the on-ramp and put some gas in my car to get back home. And I just thought, what am I doing? I need to go back and find a job that pays the bills. And slowly but surely, my classes started getting bigger. Mm-hmm. And the owners of the studio started taking notice. And one of the really great instructors, he left for a new opportunity. And I was offered his position, his spots, which were like the prime time spots. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was probably about a couple of months into these new time slots, and I was starting to make real money again, that that moment of this was the right choice was when I gave my notice at my restaurant job.
That's great.
And I became just an instructor teaching 12 classes a week and making a living doing it.
Yeah, that's exciting, because I think like they say, what, showing up on the mat. So if you just show up, even if you're going to fail or you're stressed out, like, I listened to something too, where somebody was saying, you know, sometimes winning is not just winning a race or something. Sometimes winning is just participating in it. Like, even if you come in last, because it depends on where you're at in the process of something. Awesome. Now you have this, you moved overseas into for a few years here. You've been in the UK and you have a whole new environment, and you have a couple of you have a nice little family with a couple little beings that are growing up. And so you're teaching in England, in what's in Yorkshire?
Yorkshire.
Okay, I know.
Yes.
The English words.
Yorkshire. You and every other American, myself included.
I try, but okay. So you're there, and you are teaching there, and I know that you have did something which I thought was kind of interesting, because you're interested in building community, and it's I might get this wrong. It's either glass in class or class in glass.
Class in glass, because you stretch first and then drink.
Okay. So can you just tell us like about how you do that and what happens in something like that? So
yes, so I started Class in Glass almost a year ago. I was about 5 months postpartum from my second child, and I wasn't entirely sure when and if I was going to go back to teaching. Well, somebody asked me to come and teach a teaser at a yoga festival in Yorkshire here. And so it was just like a 30-minute class. And so I came down and I did that, and I was like, oh my goodness, I forgot how much I love teaching. It had been about 2.5 years since I taught. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, you know, this is me. This is what I need to do. And at the time, there were no studios that I could go and say, hey, I'm a teacher, can I come and teach? And I thought, well, I'm going to have to do something myself. Now, there's gorgeous little village halls all over the place in Yorkshire. And I thought, well, I don't want to be a village hall teacher, but that's kind of my option right now. But I'm going to make it cool, and I want to create some community, because I miss that. I miss that what group fitness can do for people. You know, you're coming and you're working next to other people who are also putting in effort and moving their bodies and getting out of their comfort zones. And I think a lot can be gained from doing that side by side with people. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to create my own experience to create and start cultivating that community. And that's when Class in Glass was born. It was a 75-minute chance to come, move your body, and then 30, 40 minutes to enjoy kombucha and meet the people that you were sweating next to. And it became a really big success. I'm actually about to do, I think it's my sixth one, May 12th. And I've changed it so that it's a donation experience, so that people can come, they can move, they can meet people, and they can decide what the priority and of what priority their health takes, and base their experience and their payment on that. So it's a moment of self-reflection as well. Okay. And it's just been wonderful for me meeting people in a new community, for other people meeting each other. I'm watching friendships being forged, acquaintances becoming friendships. And it's just been a very awesome, wonderful experience. And also just spreading the good word of yoga. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think yoga, part of the reason why I do this podcast and what I do is because I think yoga is such a great thing for people in general, because it's not, you can modify it to your needs too. So even though if you're not feeling well or you're older and you haven't moved in a while, you don't have to do all the fancy poses. You can do something more simple, even just like moving your hands above your head and down again, like making the sun motion, you know, like that.
Yeah,
that could be enough to start with, and then you can grow with it. So
absolutely.
Yeah. And it does work on the nervous system, which, mm-hmm. You know, and which helps with all your hormones and whatnot. And I mean, I think for most of us, we're driven as animals through like our hormonal fluctuations and stuff. So to have that kind of like modified and settled down a little is nice. So now you also teach classes though, also, right? At a studio and at two studios.
Yes. I teach at a beautiful new studio here in North Yorkshire called Avalon Wellbeing Center. It's just what it sounds like. It's a center for well-being, and I teach two classes there on Mondays and Fridays. And then I am lucky enough at the beautiful farm I live on to have my own little private yoga studio that holds about 6 or 7 people. And I teach a yoga with weights class there, as well as a slow vinyasa flow once a week as well.
So the with the weights, though, is that does that give you like cardio fitness? Like less, you know, it's yoga, I know, but.
It's still very much yoga, as I think, you know, yoga is rooted in intention and breath awareness. And the way that that varies from any other fitness class is that we set intention at the beginning of class. You know, we talk about how breath is the key. It's moving mindfully. It's taking your time.
I asked Ashley if she wouldn't mind speaking a little bit more about yoga and depression and how it has helped her deal with that.
No, I don't mind at all. So I very openly talk about how both yoga, fitness, and movement help keep depression at bay. The yoga specifically, it's that opportunity to both move your body while focusing on breath and kind of creating a safe space to kind of just work through the cobwebs and the crap that come through your mind. You know, I think depression is a tricky one because it can sneak up on you. And when it sneaks up on you, it kind of just like consumes you and pulls you down into the dark little hole that it is.
Yeah.
And, so if I'm keeping my practice regular and I'm moving daily, it's less likely to sneak up on me. It's when I'm not moving, it's when I'm eating like crap, it's when I'm too much in my head that depression will sneak in and grab me. That's when it becomes a little more tricky, because when it grabs you, you're like, F the world, I don't want to do anything good for me right now, I just want to wallow in it.
Right.
And I think that's okay. I think it's okay to feel through that for a little bit and to be with those feelings. This is when it's good to have like friends and family in place to kind of be like, yeah, you're in a dark spot. And my husband will be like, go to the gym, go to the studio, go move your body. It's not a request, I'm telling you. And it may be hard to do, and it may take me a while to get there. But once I show up onto the mat and I start moving, it has pretty quick effect of kind of setting things right again. Because I think depression, you know, it takes you so much into your head. It takes you into all those dark nooks and crannies. But moving your body and breathing with mindfulness takes you out of your head and grounds you back into the earth and back into this life. Right. And that's why I think, you know, like all the meditation and sitting on your meditation cushion is fantastic, but your mind can still get the best of you.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, that movement helps keep it real, for lack of a better term.
I find that like I know a lot of yoga teachers say at the beginning of a class, like, what is your intention for your practice, or set an intention. And I have to say 99.9% of the time, my intention is just to be present. Like, I don't even go beyond that, because I feel like yoga for me, I mostly do stuff by myself, but if I'm with other people, I might look at somebody if I'm really lost, like if I lost the instructor somehow, like, you know, or people are far ahead and I'm still like, well, where am I? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? Because that happens sometimes. But when I am just mainly doing it, I'm so focused on trying to just stay in the pose and not fall over, that I don't have time to think of anything else. Because there are those times where you're like, like a little wobbly, or, you know, other times you feel like, yes, this is great, I feel so great, you know. And
but it, sometimes those places, those poses that are the most challenging, that help us feel the most alive and help us like get back into our bodies. And it's like, those things are there to challenge us, to help bring us back and make us feel alive and make us feel challenged. And it's just like, those are some of the most pivotal moments in the class, is when you feel like, oh shit, I'm going to fall over to the person next to me and knock them over.
Or punch them in the face as I'm doing something in the
Hey, I can't tell you how many times I've been kicked in the face in a busy yoga class where somebody's going into Warrior 3 in front of me, and we both are, and it's like face meets toes.
That'll keep you present.
That keeps you present all the time.
And if you're not present, it's totally going to knock you out and be like, what? Okay, wake up. You know, actually, I mean, it's true about the meditation thing, though, too, because I meditated long before I ever did yoga. I mean, I did other exercises and stuff, but I did the meditation before I learned yoga. And I think I found myself often in the clouds a little bit and not being grounded. And So I think that being in your head part can be really tricky, because you're kind of like searching for stuff outside of yourself maybe sometimes.
Yeah.
Instead of being on the earth, like even if you're a spiritual being, it doesn't mean that you have to be out there in the clouds. You can be, you're on the earth, so you need to like be here living your life. So
100% agree with that. And it is a tough battle every moment of the day, I think, but I love that saying that goes, to live in the past is to be depressed, to live in the future is to be anxious, but to be here in the now is to be present.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. Anxious. Yeah. I don't want to be anxious. So I had my first anxiety kind of attack not that long ago, which I never had before. And it was actually okay though, because I had people supporting me and work me through it. But quite surprising to me, because I felt like I had a kind of regression to like when I was like 5 years old, of jumping off an edge on into water. And I used to jump off a higher things even when I was five. I didn't have fear, and it was weird. It was like how fear kind of came back up, but I had these people around me that kind of helped. So I think it's nice too that your family and your friends, as you're saying, they know when you're kind of falling into this place to kind of say like, okay, get moving, get to the gym, go do something, go to the studio. To have a support system is really good. I think if people do yoga, like you said, with your glass and glass. I don't know why I have a problem with mixing stuff up, but like that people are forging friendships, and even, you know, sometimes we're friends with somebody, like we could just be workout buddies or whatever, but it's nice to have that kind of those connections to people to help you along in the process of doing stuff and having a community. First, I would like to ask you to share your website with people so that people can find out more about you.
So my website is ashleymarleymovement.com. You can also find me on Instagram at ashleymarleymovement and Facebook, the same thing.
Okay. So I will also put that in the show notes. So for anybody who is looking, you will be able to find all the links and a little bio about Ashley. So do you have a recommended book or a favorite quote that you would like to tell people? It doesn't have to be both. It could be either or.
It's like such the hot spot right now. Book. I feel like I haven't had the chance to read forever, because by the time I get to bed, I'm so exhausted. But I am currently reading Brené Brown's Daring Greatly, which is quite wonderful. And coincidentally enough, a girlfriend sent me an Oprah podcast with Brené speaking, and it's making me dig her even more. She's all about vulnerability and working through shame. And the podcast is The Anatomy of Truth. And I just think it's wonderful. And my new favorite quote right now, which just doesn't have to do with much of anything, but it does, is a great man plants trees where he will not be enjoying the shade within his lifetime. So it's that idea of leaving the world a better place for the generations below us, which is just kind of weighing heavy on my mind right now. And I think yoga is a practice beyond physicality. It's being that community aspect of it, and just thinking about ways that I can make a lesser impact on the environment by making a greater impact in my community.
Right. I think about like, what is your legacy is kind of like a good question for people to ask, like by planting the trees, like whatever you do now, it does have like a ripple effect down the road. We need more trees too. So
but we do, and physical trees, as well as like emotional and spiritual and hypothetical trees. And if I were to look at what my legacy is, it's helping people realize their greatness and realize their physical abilities as well as mental abilities, because by taking care of themselves, they're going to show up greater in the world, and it's going to cause that ripple effect of just making the world a better place because they're a happier person.
Yeah, that's great. So you also have something coming up, a day-long retreat. And can you tell us a little bit about that? And what would somebody, first of all, like I don't know a lot about retreats. So what does a person do when they go on a retreat? Like, what is a kind of thing that they would do? Can you give us like a little kind of summary of that? And then like, what would be the primary takeaway that you would hope for people on the retreat?
Most retreats you can expect to, if it's a yoga retreat, you're going to do some pranayama, you know, breath work. You're going to do some movement. You might have some workshops. And at my retreat, we're going to be doing those things. My retreat, it's not going to be your average yoga retreat. It is, it's based in the physical. However, it is that integration of mind and body. So it is, okay, you know, creating a space of mindfulness and physical awareness through movement. Because movement is life. It's going to be a place for people to unravel, to stretch, unjudged. Everybody is welcomed, and it's going to be three yoga classes, a California Vinyasa flow, a yoga sculpt class, so the yoga with weights, and we're wrapping it up with comfy yoga, which is a nice term for restorative yoga. We're going to have two mini workshops on technique breakdowns, which is going to be the fundamentals of breaking down a vinyasa, as well as doing a squat and a push-up, which are fitness moves that you not only need in a fitness class, but you need to squat to be able to sit on the toilet. Yeah. You know, these things are not just for good booties. They're like fundamentals for like getting up off the couch. Right. And we're going to be doing some health and fitness mapping. So the takeaway from this retreat is going to be the launch pad to the next 30 days of your life, to just take your health and make it a priority so that you can show up for the ones that you love. And so we're going to be doing a lot of mental work around what that looks like and how are you going to show up to achieve that so that you can be the best for those that you love and showing up in the world.
Yeah. And then when people follow the, like a 30-day thing, it's easy to create that into a lifelong habit.
So absolutely.
Having guideposts and the community around that, that's really important. Well, I really enjoyed speaking with you, Ashley, today. And thank you for joining me in our Conversations podcast here. Not Oprah's Conversations, but Amy's Conversations. Scotch's Lifespan Conversations, because I know she's Conversations too. anyway, I hope that you'll join us again in the future and tell us, like, we can get even more into maybe like the Kriyas and Kundalini and other things too.
Yeah.
It's a great place, and I hope people will look up Ashley's site and learn more about her. And if you're when is your retreat coming? What day is it?
My retreat is on June 9th at Avalon Wellbeing Center. It's going to be a full day of spectacular, amazing work in Skipton in North Yorkshire. And if you're in the UK area, it's going to be well worth it. I'm really excited about it.
Okay, you can find all the details on the show notes about that. And so thank you for joining me, and until next time.
Thank you, Amy.
If you have any questions, please send them to hello@consciouslife.guru. Now, before I sign off, I'd like to ask you to subscribe to the channel of YouTube if you're here, or to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening. And please leave a review. It means a lot. And don't forget to check out our website, consciouslife.guru. Until next time. Music in this production includes God Fury by Anno Domini Beats, Birds by Silent Partner, and Cast of Pods by Doug Maxwell.